This episode of the Blackzit Global Podcast is sponsored by Blackzit Global Passport. Join aspiring Black expats, and repats, where you can build community, get resources, and gain support along your journey abroad. You're invited to join Blackzit Global Passport. Inside Passport, you'll find exclusive workshops on everything from expat taxes, financial planning, insurance, job boards, accountability check-ins, and more. You can even take Passport on the go with our app available for iOS and Android devices. Just click the link in the episode you're listening to or visit blackzitglobal.com and click on Passport. See you inside.
And I said, oh my gosh, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous. You know, I'm not thinking about, you know, the business infrastructure. I was thinking about the beauty of the desert and going back into a country that's been here so much longer than the United States, and history has derived from the Middle East. That's where it all started. So I went on that basis, and here I am. When I got ready to leave, I did not tell my family until a week before I left.
Close your eyes and imagine living a life you love, unapologetic and unbothered. Free from daily microaggressions from Karens and Kens. Free from the fear of police brutality and systemic racism. Wouldn't that feel amazing? Now open your eyes. What if I told you that it's possible? Hear inspiring stories and get the actual blueprints from brothers and sisters of the diaspora who are living out their wildest dreams abroad. You've heard the term, now be inspired by the movement. I'm Krishan Wright, and this is Blackzit Global. Welcome to another episode of the Blackzit Global Podcast. I'm excited because I have the opportunity of speaking to one of my students in the Blackzit Global Move Abroad course. Tiffany Smith is joining me today from Saudi Arabia. Welcome to the show, Tiffany.
Hello, everybody.
Tiffany, you have an interesting story on so many levels. You are a learning experience designer, and that is a field that is very in demand. And for some people who are either interested in that field or who are already in that field, they often don't think that those skills or even those opportunities are transferable abroad. So I definitely want to delve into that because I think it'll be really informative for our listeners. But before we get to all of that, I want to start with your origin story. So tell me a little bit about your life before you moved abroad.
Okay, well, I was originally a network engineer before I morphed into a learning experience designer. And there was a statement a long time ago where they said you might have up to 8 different types of professions before you pass on from this world. So I think I've lived at this point about 5. Prior to network engineer, I was doing accounting and bookkeeping, and then you fast forward to network engineer, I morphed then into instructional design. I also have some legal background, which also helps because, right, nothing that you do is ever wasted. Becoming an instructional designer started out when I was like developing just, you know, how-tos for software. I was working at a company and we needed we need to train the users on how to use the software for their computer. So I would write like the how-to instructions and found out that I was really good at it. Took it from there to go back and obtain my master's in organizational performance workplace learning, which is just really a long word for instructional technology or instructional performance technology, as it's also known. And then the rest is history. I made the transition. I will say it was not easy. I did do a couple of blogs along the way, how to make a transition after being in a career field for 18 years, because I was probably a network engineer close to 18 years when I decided to move into instructional design. Second grade, I would think, I was kind of slow at learning. I did not learn as fast as I needed to. And I was going to a private school. So my dear sister, Agnes, I remember her, second grade, and she worked with me for a summer. And after that, I was on the honor roll, getting straight A's, and there was no stopping me. From there, I would say that I didn't even know what an instructional designer, LX designer was. I come from the day of you were either a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. I was always fairly good at math. Science fascinated me. I'm not going to say I was the greatest at science. And I don't even think they had STEM or STEAM out there yet. I think it was just, like I said, you know, you're either a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, or an engineer. Once I found out that you could actually enjoy and make money by writing, and make lots of money by writing, because a lot of people don't like to write and they can't write. As an engineer, we know, I mean, I'm not putting down engineers by no means, any type of engineer, but we know the devil's in the details, right? They want to tell you everything, not necessarily chunking. It's just like a brain dump. I had to work pretty hard to bring my writing probably up from a 7 to a 10, but I didn't mind. And I actually found out that I was good at it later. So I'm not going to say I am the world's best grammar and linguist and what have you, but I can hold my own now.
How long have you been in Saudi Arabia now?
I've been in Saudi Arabia for 4 years as of December 2nd.
Wow. And was this your first international assignment abroad?
No, actually, I was in the Peace Corps. I was in Mali, Timbuktu. There is a Timbuktu. So Timbuktu, Mali, which is in West Africa. And I actually went there straight out of college. And then I also had traveled to South America to explore a little bit. But I also had a couple of assignments there as well. I always knew as a child, similar to when you shared your story, that there had to be more than my front porch. I'm from metropolitan Chicago area, but I was born and raised in a small town. I guess it's a small town, Elgin, Illinois. And my parents, we entertained, I guess you'd call them exchange students back in the day. So we entertained exchange students, and we also had missionaries come stay with us. And I was just, I thought that was normal. I thought everybody did that. So I learned from them, and I was just fascinated by their stories that they would share. And I was just like, I'm going to do this one day. I don't know how, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it happen. I remember my sister became really good friends with one of the exchange students that stayed with us. Her name was Astrid, and I think she was from Holland. And it was so funny because she said, she came in, and she's like, "Where are your servants? This is a very nice cottage." And I had to laugh because I was like, this is a 3-story house with a basement and bedrooms and, you know, upstairs, downstairs, full bathroom. This isn't no cottage, but I guess compared to her in Europe, it is a cottage. But so by me being young, I said, and she said, "Where are your servants?" I said, "You're looking at her."
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
I was like, "You're looking at the servant right here, dear." But yeah, so that's what prompted. And I would read books, and I would just lose myself like in an imaginary world and just pretend that, you know, one day, and I would just pray. And I said, "One day, God, I know you're going to take me there." I didn't know how, but I knew he would do it. And then when I actually got to high school and college, my first major, because I have a few degrees, my first major was international business. I did a minor in French, and I actually did a double major, international business and marketing. And so the reason that I did international business with an emphasis on foreign relations was the fact that I knew I wanted to be an expat. And it was because, you know, back then, you didn't, especially as a Black person and a Black female, most people don't even know what an expat is. So I was really blessed to know it at an early age, but I just didn't know how to get there. And so I purposely did that major to learn about different cultures, how to do business, how to act, how to adapt. And from there, I kept the dream, but it was really hard. As you see, that was back when I was in high school, and I'm really far from high school, right?
You know, give or take a little bit. So you have this wonderfully diverse background and experience, like you said, exposure to different cultures through your parents having different people in the home visiting, and this curiosity of either language and culture that's really catapulted you into your latest opportunity. But for many people, when they're considering their Blackxit or a job transfer, career shift, Saudi Arabia isn't one that pops. I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and I have to say, you are the first. So step me through like this opportunity and what made it so compelling, because I'm just so curious to dive into this.
For sure. Well, you're going to laugh. I always tell people this and they're like, are you serious? But I actually received an inquiry on LinkedIn, out of all places, regarding a job opportunity here in Saudi Arabia. I didn't know it was in Saudi Arabia at the time. They said it was in the Middle East. So I pretty much told myself, as long as it wasn't any of the stands, any of the countries that end with the stands, I should be good, because I didn't ask her at that point. So by that time, I had submitted my resume and everything. And then I said, oh, by the way, what country? After the fact. So you see where I'm going with this, right? So I submitted my resume. Then I said, oh, by the way, what country is this in? And she's like, Saudi Arabia. And I'm like, huh. And I just kind of had to laugh, right? Because I was like, huh, okay. So then there's this, this is my story and I'm sticking with it because it is the truth. There was this movie, you might've remembered it. It was called Lace. And it was with Phoebe Cates from Gremlins. I'm really dating myself right now. And so I remember this movie and it was taken partly in France, partly in the UK, and then the other part was in Saudi Arabia. And I was always so fascinated. It was one of my favorite movies. And I said, oh my gosh, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous. You know, I'm not thinking about, you know, the business infrastructure. I'm just thinking about, you know, the beauty of the desert and going back into a country that's been here so much longer than the United States, and history has derived from the Middle East. That's where it all started. So I went on that basis and here I am. When I got ready to leave, I did not tell my family until a week before I left.
Okay. So obvious question. How did that go?
You probably know pretty much how that went. So I knew that I love my family greatly. Unfortunately, I lost my father before I did come over here, because I lost my father in 2017. Sorry. Thank you. But it was my sister and my aunt. And I went to Chicago, because I actually live in Atlanta. So I went to Chicago to see them and say goodbye. And it was tough, because there was a lot of questions that they had and that I couldn't answer, but I told them, I said, don't worry, I'll be okay. But I think what happens is that we as human beings and people, we tend to fear those things that we don't understand or that we don't know. So similarly to, you hear all these things on the media about the Middle East and this and that and that and this, and parts of it, yes, is true, but there's a lot of parts that aren't so true. And so I went on the basis of saying, you know what, this is going to be my adventure. I'm going to see what this opportunity is going to lead me to. And I'm just going to do it, because I have this saying that I actually took from Joyce Myers. It's called, do it afraid. So whatever I do, and if I'm feeling a little afraid, I just do it anyways, because you just never know what the outcome is, and you can't rob yourself of that opportunity because of fear.
Yeah, it's an acronym, right? False evidence appearing real.
Yeah, and or face everything and rise.
But yes, I do like exactly. It. I like right. It depends on how you want to frame it. But as human beings, our fear is often from that which we don't know. And your brain always looks for places and points of reference. And where it doesn't have that information, it's like a computer, right? It's going to come back and say, I don't know. And for us,
this is
that's
too
like,
far out of my comfort zone.
Exactly.
And or you think there's no way you're going to do it. Yeah.
Right. It's like when you're able to face fear and do it anyway, push yourself, then you're able to lean into it. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be a positive outcome every time, but at least you've conquered and faced it. And there's a sense of accomplishment. And oftentimes, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was, right?
Exactly.
You talked a little bit about your families and the media as perception of the Middle East and Saudi Arabia in particular, and you being on this adventure kind of fact-finding mission in addition to, you know, your responsibilities and your role. So what are some of the things that you think that people don't know enough about or get wrong with respect to Saudi Arabia?
Well, my experience, and I say my experience because everybody has a different experience. So I'm coming from the experience of a Black single woman, and my experience has been a good one. I find the Arabs in Saudi Arabia to be very loving, very giving. The ones I have met and become friends with it's just like almost like being back at home. Just like you have people in any country, any state or what have you, that are a certain way, of course, you're going to have that. That's everywhere. No matter where you go, you're going to have something that you don't like, or there's going to be people that are a certain way or what have you. But I found most of them to be just exceptionally nice. The one friend that I made when I first got here, we met at like a driving program. Yes, I did learn to drive in Saudi Arabia. That's another story, though. But anyways, she's Saudi, and we became very, very good friends to this day. And I call her kids my little nieces and nephews. And just to show you the hospitality, and I didn't even get this when I moved down south to Atlanta from Chicago area. It gets really cold here. And that's something that people don't realize. It snows in the desert.
Wow.
Really, really cold. When I say cold, and I'm a Chicago girl, it's cold. And I'll have to share the story if we get time about when I went to Jordan to go to Petra, where Indiana Jones was filmed. And it snowed, and I didn't bring any winter clothes, and I was freezing. But like I said, that'll be another story if we have time. But it snows. The desert is exceptionally cold. It's a chilling cold. And this young lady that I met took me to a store, got some warm clothes because it was around Christmas. And I was like, oh, I can take it. And I was like, no, you need more than a hoodie. Now, to say that, that means that you can only really, there's only about 3 days, maybe a week that it's really cold. And then after that, it's back to the 70s and 80s. So the hottest it gets here, and it gets really hot, can get up to 130, 140 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's brutal. And you're sweating like a pig.
Oh, my word. Please tell me there's air conditioning.
There is air conditioning. Sometimes.
Portable, because I'd have to have like the hat, the everything blowing at me
exactly.
at all times.
Exactly. No, there's air conditioned, but you got to remember back in the day when it all started, before it built up. You know, if you look back in the history, they traveled. They lived in the desert. They traveled in caravans and tribes, and that is something that I respect and really love about Saudi Arabia, is that they're very relationship oriented. They love their families. They have big families, big houses and big families. And but family is first for them. I think like the media always talks about Muslim this or Muslim that. And really, I've learned, if you look at it close enough and be objective, it all really stems, the three religions, right? Judaism, Christianity, Islam, from Abrahamic law, from Abraham. So it's really interesting to learn more about the culture. Saudi Arabia is beautiful. It has really interesting places to visit. Riyadh, which is the capital, is amazing. They're doing so many changes right now. And actually, if you're in Riyadh, it doesn't really feel like you're in Saudi Arabia because it's just like a really big city. I'm in Darhan, which is the eastern province. And it tends to get more hot and humid here because we're close to the Arabian Gulf. I know that some people call it the Persian Gulf, but they call it the Arabian Gulf. So I'll call it the Arabian Gulf here. But yeah, there's a lot of different things that I think people don't realize about the Middle East. It's truly a beautiful part to be in. It is extremely hot. But there's so much to learn because the history is so rich. Something I did learn here is in Tabuk, which is like the border of Saudi Arabia. Well, it's still Saudi Arabia, but it's like the border of Saudi Arabia to where I believe it goes into Egypt, is where Moses was appeared to by God at the burning bush. And wow. Here I thought I always was like in Egypt, but it's real close to Egypt. But there's if you do the research, you'll see that there's a lot of history that goes here. So it's just fascinating to me to be here to see all the different, you know, the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, I'm sorry, the Arabian Gulf, and just other places that you've read about, perhaps in the Bible, or you've read someplace or heard, and just to see these different journeys that people took to get here. It's just a lot of history, and it's very rich.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it sounds like you also have really experienced a cultural immersion, and among that, right, is also language, which we can't ignore in the conversation. And so I know you talked about how welcoming, how familial, and all of the sights and sounds that you've been able to experience. And so with that, I'm assuming, and like I said, always correct me, I'm assuming you didn't have a foundation in Arabic before.
Your assumption is absolutely correct.
Got it. Very okay.
Yeah, buddy. So, So the good thing is most of the Middle East, including, well, Saudi Arabia, because you look at the GCC countries, right? And that's like Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Dubai, which is UAE, Jordan, and I'm missing a couple other ones. Is it Iran? You have all these countries, which is, they're called like the GCC countries, and they do speak English. That is one of their, not first language, but maybe second or third languages. Lebanon is French and Arabic. So they speak French and Arabic, but they also speak English over there. And what's interesting about Saudi Arabia is that it's home to expats from about almost 60 different cultures. So you have people from Pakistan, India, Europe, the UK, America, South America, Bangladesh. That can be challenging because obviously you have all these different dialects, like I think Urdu, for is Pakistan, and then Hindi is in India. I think that's like the mother tongue, but Urdu and Hindi are close. So that can be challenging. The first time when I got here, I didn't run into a lot of people that knew English. So that's where Google Translate comes in. Google Translate becomes your best friend. And then if you like to play charades, first word, second word, you learn how to communicate. You really do. But for the most part, everyone speaks English. It might be the country actually in general, because a lot of people go get educated in the UK, Europe, and the US. So they speak pretty fluent English, definitely better than we would ever speak Arabic. And it's a tough language to learn because imagine we read left to right. And when you learn Arabic, it's right to left. My first day on the job, the computer, the keyboard has the Arabic letters. And I was like,
oh, my word.
And I was trying to find out, well, where is it? Because, you know, the things that you don't even think about, right? The paper size is different. Like I bought a printer and I'm like, why does the paper fit? Because the paper is longer and because it's not like 8.5 by 11. So the paper is like longer and thinner. if you don't think about.
And it's fascinating to me because you talked about writing and instructional design, which is, as you mentioned, a very detailed, process-oriented field. And then to be in Saudi Arabia and having an Arabic keyboard and with the kind of work that you are doing, how did you manage that kind of culture shock?
It was tough, but what I should say, it had the Arabic letters, but it does have the letters, our English letters and numbers, but it's still not quite the QWERTY. It's QWERTY, but it's not QWERTY, if that makes sense. It's different. But managing the culture shock overall, it took me a while because it was just so different. I mean, everything that you're used to, from grocery shopping to your bank accounts to, you know, just being around your friends, and by this culture being so opposite of America, because, you know, when I first got here, you still have to wear an abaya, and I still have to wear an abaya in some places. I don't have to wear a niqab. The niqab is the one where you just see the eyes and you don't see anything else, and they tie it. But most people, like Egyptians and what have you, you just wear like a hijab and then the abaya. So that was really tough because, you know, we're not used to wearing an abaya. And then especially, like I just told you, how hot it gets here. And you're just like, oh my God. So you have the abaya, the heat, and I'll just add this in to make everybody laugh. And if you go through the changes of life, now you have the abaya, the heat, and your body to deal with.
So it's like a flame, a torch, exactly. Under everything, like, in addition.
Oh, it's brutal. And you're just like, oh my God, help me.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So, but you've been there 4 years. So
yeah, I've been here 4 years. I'm not used to the heat. I am not used to the heat. The heat goes from March. So imagine this hotness of 100 plus from March till about the end of October and the middle of November.
That's intense.
It's very intense. If you don't like the heat, this is not the place to be.
Note to self.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about quality of life and things that you do, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of temperature adjustment, exactly. A lot of heat going on. And because it's a Muslim country, so there aren't a lot of those typical creature comforts that you would find in a Western society, like bars and things like that. So what have you been able to do or enjoy outside of, like you mentioned, some travel? But I think for anyone who's listening that might be curious or interested, what is a typical day, or what are some of the experiences you've been able to enjoy?
Well, a typical day for me is I usually get up at 3 a.m. and I'll go exercise. And you probably guessed the reason I get up that early is because if I don't get up that early, the sun's going to be up by, this is especially in the summer, by 6 o'clock. And yeah, there's just no way. So I become like a vampire during those months. And actually the culture is like that. They'll sleep very late on the day and the weekends, and they come out at night. And that's probably the reason they do that, is because it's so hot during the day. But after I exercise, then I will probably come in. I'm always upskilling, reskilling, you know, do the computer stuff and everything. But for things to do around town, or things, extracurricular activities, if you're living here, if you like to eat, there's really good food places. The food is amazing. Mediterranean food, Lebanese food. A foodie, you would do great here because there's just so many places to go and enjoy. But I'm not a foodie. So occasionally I'll go out and I will enjoy it. But we just got a movie theater. I was telling Krishan this earlier. So we just got a movie theater, I think about 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So that helps. So we get to go see the movies. It's nice. Some movies don't come, needless to say, you know why. But it's nice to be able to do that. Now, as far as like bars or dancing or things that you're used to at home, you go into another country next door to Bahrain. So everybody goes to Bahrain. The saying is, it's better in Bahrain.
Get your bar on in Bahrain. Okay.
Yeah. So even Saudis go to Bahrain. So everybody goes to Bahrain. Bahrain is just like any other place. It actually has a naval base there. You know, it's just like any, as soon as you cross over, it's like, oh, wow, I'm back at home. I mean, you see people out wearing shorts, you know, wearing whatever. You do have people that still wear abayas over there because you still are in the Middle East. Just like if you go to Dubai, I mean, you go to Dubai, Dubai is like living, it's like a little Vegas. You don't even realize you're in the Middle East in Dubai. But
that's so true. Because when I went to Dubai, I was just like, this feels like Vegas.
Yes, exactly. And they did that on purpose, right? So they can attract more tourists. But yeah, so you go over to Bahrain and spend a weekend, and then you come back over here, and you know, but there's sights to see. It depends on really what you're interested in. I would say that the country definitely caters more to family versus a single person in general, because like I said, it's a very family oriented culture, but it's changing. You're seeing a lot more changes that are going in another direction than from what it used to be.
So let's talk a little bit about safety and cost of living, because I'm curious about that. You know, you talked about being a single woman there, and many people are in a family system, family unit. Mm-hmm. And so as you are navigating, you know, driving, doing all the things, how do you feel in terms of either physical and or psychological safety?
I'll start with the driving. So driving is very challenging. I live kind of like on, it's not a military base, but it's like a camp where I work at. You are able to live on camp, what they call it, versus off camp. So I don't drive off camp. I usually have a driver or a taxi or whatever, because it can be very challenging. And that's something, if you are going to be a digital nomad or an expat, you really want to find out which side of the road they drive on and how many accidents they have weekly and how the driving habits are, because I'm going to tell you that I have been in Mexico. I've been in Texas, probably will do really well here. It can be very dangerous, and it can be very challenging as well. But for the most part, as far as safety is concerned, this place is absolutely safe. I mean, I feel safer here than I do in the U.S. for many reasons. First and foremost, I don't have to worry about DWB. You know, I don't have to worry about that, period, because they appear to be very accepting of different races. But like I tell people, it doesn't matter where you go, you're going to have racism or casteism. And it's just part of life. What happens, though, is that obviously you have racism in the U.S. and a lot of people that are here from the U.S., they bring that with them. So that is the racism that you would have here. You can lead the horse to the water, but you can't make them drink. So even though you take a person out of their environment, it's a mindset, right? So if they're racist in the U.S., they're going to be racist here. Some people have changed. I've seen that with my own eyes, which is really interesting, because you can't come here and live amongst, there's 67 to 70 different cultures here. So it would be really hard, you know, to be racist when now you're the spot, right? Because we're always the ones that go in the room and we look around and we don't see too many of us, but now it's flipped because that's all you see are people of color. And, I think it's a good experience for a lot of people that are not people of color to see what it actually feels like to be in a room where they're the spot, I guess you can say. I don't want to say spot, but you know what I mean. I'm trying to look for a more appropriate word, but a person that is not of color that stands out, because, you know, we're always adapting to that. I call it the switch. Most of us know what the switch is. As far as safety, like I said, I go out running, jogging, working out at 3 a.m. in the morning. I would never do that. I would never do that in the U.S., no matter where it was. That just would not be safe. Not even if I had a gun.
That's just not safe.
So, but yeah, it's a very safe place. I had an experience when I first got here. I had forgot my purse at this luncheon place we were eating at, and I had money because I was going to open my bank account and do the exchange. And it was quite a bit. I think it might have been like maybe $1,200. And so I left the purse there because I forgot I had left it there. It was there for about 2.5 hours before I noticed it was gone. And I came back. Everything was intact.
Wow. Yeah, you would not. Yeah. You would have a if you had a purse that you came back to. Yes. And if it had money in the purse, you know, in the United States, that's how it would have been. Like, if, but more than likely, no.
No, definitely
that's
not.
That's amazing. So is it like a lower cost of living? Or I think some people have a perception that the Middle East, because of, you know, again, things that you see in the media, things you see on a feed, right? You think of oil and, like you said, big homes, a high degree of wealth and opulence. Do you find that that also, well, one, whether or not it's true, along with that, is it where you feel like, okay, you know, the standard of living that I have here is something that, you know, like I said, part of it, I guess, because you've been there so long, right? You've adapted to, do you find like it's like super expensive or much more reasonable than you had first thought?
So your first question, it depends on where you are in the Middle East. You've been to Dubai. Dubai, just like they have that reality show on Netflix, Bling. Dubai Bling or Bling Dubai or whatever. I haven't watched it because I just refuse to watch that reality
show. Yeah,
but anyways, Dubai is very, very expensive. I mean, there's no getting around it. It's just like Vegas, right?
I was walking around there and at some point it was just so much like beauty and just things that just blew my mind. And the cars and the jewelry. And I was like, if I could give somebody my eyes, like nobody would believe me. They would have to like, see, it was wild. No, so yes, I agree.
It's very expensive. Here, it's not so, it depends. So just like you have anywhere else, you have, you know, you have like the working class, you have the rich, the wealthy or what have you, and then maybe the middle class or what have you. As far as that's concerned, it's Saudi riyals, it's SAR, and it is 3.75, the exchange rate is 3.75 to one American dollar. So you get almost 4 Saudi riyals to one American dollar. So if you do the math there, you're actually getting more bang for your buck, literally, right? But it can be expensive. So like, for example, in the U.S., we have state taxes and taxes, and I'll wait for you to bring that up because that is something you want to know about taxes, being a U.S. citizen. So I would say that an apartment here, depending on where you live and what kind of apartment you want, probably be able to find a pretty decent one for maybe about $400, $500. So whatever that is in SAR, and they do have some apartments that are furnished. And then, of course, they do have apartments that cost more than that. And it just really depends on your preference. But I've had some friends that live off camp and they have pretty decent apartments and what have you. And that's how much they're paying for them, which I think is a pretty good deal considering in America. I think what the average is like, what, $1,600 or $900 in the city or...
Yeah,
$2,000. Yeah,
I was just reading this morning. Manhattan, the median price of an apartment is now over $4,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. I don't even know how people could afford that. Sorry,
it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Oh, I was like, the median.
And that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, because there was a huge exodus during the pandemic, especially during lockdown, where people were like, okay, I'm remote, I make all this money, why am I paying all this money in taxes? I'm going to go to a non-tax state or a warmer climate or whatever, right? People became more migratory. You know, inflation and all these other factors, it is definitely there and climbing,
Yes. Got to work on our economy in the U.S.
Definitely. Because at some point, you can't allow the equilibrium to be drastically altered, right? Exactly. You can't swing the pendulum so far where people are priced out of home ownership.
Yep.
And then they're forced into rental, which I have no problem being a renter. I've owned multiple homes in my life and I love renting. Okay. My Blackson is like, here's the keys, boo. I'm out the door. Right. I like, no stress.
Don't have to worry about anything.
Oh, yeah. But with renting right now, because of so much tumult and volatility, you're seeing what I believe to be price gouging. And so you have landlords that are taking advantage of the macroeconomics and unjustifiably raising rent. And so you have it on both ends, right? I can't afford to buy a home because the cost of living is such that I can't save to a rate that I can have even a down payment. And if I did, I'm getting the higher interest rate. And then on the other side, well, now I'm getting priced out of my renter's market. I may have been able to afford the lease, but now my rent has gone up 25-30% and my paycheck is not even keeping pace with inflation. So there has to be some level, in my opinion, of intervention, because you see it in the marketplace, not only in housing, but in other areas, the grocery store, et cetera, where, like I said, I believe that a lot of this is not driven by, you know, high inflationary times. It's kind of people capitalizing on the moment and not considering the real world consequences of people becoming unhoused and displaced.
Yes, definitely reactive mode versus proactive mode. And unfortunately, I see it there in the US, but I think it's also happening in the UK has a big problem with what's going on there after they've made, you know, a decision to leave Brexit.
Ooh, bad idea.
Yeah, but that's another conversation too.
That's a conversation for another episode. So let's talk taxes. As a U.S. citizen, and probably should state that for those of you who don't know, what do they say? Like, the two things in life are certain: death and taxes.
Yes, death and taxes, and your color, right?
Right, exactly.
That's what my dad told me. He goes, there's three things you're going to have to do, Tiffany. You're going to have to stay black, you're going to have to pay taxes, and then one day you're going to die. My dad, I love him dearly. God rest his soul. Yes. He was in the military, and he raised me hardcore because he knew that life would be tough. Mm. And I'm grateful for it, because every lesson that he's taught me has catapulted me to where I am, him and my mom. Mm. But taxes with the U.S., as you know, Krishan, they follow you wherever you go.
Like a stalker.
Yes. I'm worse than a stalker.
Right.
At least a stalker, you can probably kill him or something. But you can't. I don't think you can kill the taxes.
Nope. I mean, the only way you can do it is to give up your citizenship, and that is not advised.
yeah, definitely. Because you have a lot of people. Oh my gosh, so many people who want to give up their citizenship. And, you know, you always think that the grass is greener. I'm here to tell you, it is not greener. You better keep your American citizenship as long as you have that right, because they're already trying to take it away from us anyways. And people died so we could vote and have that right. So don't give it up. Taxes will follow you wherever you go. That's just something. It's only with a U.S. person. It's not with U.K. yet. Australia is trying to make theirs that way, I heard from a coworker that I used to work with who was from Australia. You definitely will get taxed on your income. Now, the great thing about it is, as an expat, and this has nothing to do, it's not country specific, but the first, I believe I have to check and see if they changed it, the first 110 $115,000, it's either $110,000 or $115,000 that you make, you're not taxed on that. And then after that, you're taxed on any money after that at the regular tax levels. And the other thing is that you want to keep in mind when you work abroad is that you're no longer paying into your Social Security bucket. So when you work abroad, and you know, everyone's different where they are in their life. If you're young, then that's great and you have time. But if you're like maybe older, start a little late, such as myself, then you really want to take that into consideration because that will decrease your bucket if you're depending on that. If you're not depending on them, that's good. And I'm not depending on that. If it's there, that's great. But unfortunately, you know, I don't know what that will be. So those are the things you want to remember. You want, number one, you want to remember that taxes are going to follow you regardless where you go. It's not country specific. Do not want to give up your American citizenship. That would be a bad move, but that is up to you. But I suggest you do your homework. And then the third thing is that the tax laws state that on the first $110,000 or $115,000, you will not be taxed. And then everything after that, you will be taxed. My fourth point was the fact that you want to make sure that you have something that's going to compensate for your Social Security bucket if you're paying into that. And another thing I wanted to mention, Krishan, that's really important too, is if you're coming over as a person who owns a home, that's a whole nother setting that you have to go through because you want to set up systems or people. Like if you're going to sell your home, then that's great. I own a home. I didn't sell it. I'm really happy I did not because especially look where we're at. But let me tell you, it has been challenging because I had to set up systems. I had to make it a smart house. There's a whole bunch of things that you have to really consider regarding that, especially if you're going to leave the utilities and stuff on, who's going to come over and run the water once a month. If you have a car, I have a car. My car went dead like the first 2 years because no one was driving it. And, you know, it's just all these things I did not know and I have to learn. The other thing is that your life becomes even more challenging because America, the U.S., especially bank platforms, they don't allow for international numbers. So if you're in the military, you know, you have to leave somebody in charge and you can just like use their number. And I think they use a AFO number or what have you. But if you're an expat or digital nomad, they can't take that number. Like my number is a Saudi number. I do have a US number in Atlanta for family and friends. And I had to get that for two-way authentication because when I originally came over here and had my American number, I got rid of it because I was just paying money and I wasn't using it. And when I got rid of it, my bank locked me out for 6 months. Yes, SunTrust.
You do not want to get rid of that, you know, and I have some information in the course that we talk about like how to set your numbers up because especially now with banking, a lot of people are encountering challenges because they want to cut the cord, right? But you need to be careful about how or when to cut the cord. Have you been able to access the healthcare system there and what is that like?
So the healthcare system here is the free healthcare. It is similar, I would say, probably, I've never lived anywhere else that had free healthcare. So I guess from my colleagues, it's similar to like Canada, maybe Europe and the UK. I thought I would be a fan of free healthcare, but that's something that I'm really undecisive on. And I'm kind of not sure if I want the US to go that way. Free healthcare is great that you can get it, but in some respects, it's not so great because you have to wait for a very, very long time to get something that could be very pertinent to your health, a surgery or what have you. That can be another conversation, but it is free healthcare system here. I would say that wherever you go to check out the healthcare and really make sure, the United States does have one of the best healthcare systems in the world, whether we know it or want to believe it or not. I think Finland or Sweden, one of those, they also have a really good one. As far as healthcare, it is free here, it suffices.
I mean, the doctors, do they speak English or they have bedside manner that's consistent with what you've experienced in the U.S.?
That depends on the doctor. And most of the doctors do speak English or some enough English to help you or find out. Some of the doctors are all around. Like I was talking about the GCC countries. They're not all, they're all Arab, like whether it's Egypt or, you know, from different countries surrounding Saudi Arabia. But like I said, it's just a matter of doing your homework. I think if I had a pending healthcare issue, something that was really serious, I would have to really take that into consideration and look at, you know, weigh the cost and the benefits of it and go from there. Because some things, one thing that I realized here when it comes to medications, they're not as strong, like the painkillers are not as strong as they are in the U.S. And you're just like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know? Like, this ain't even putting me to sleep.
Oh, no.
For me, you know?
Right? But surprise.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I'm a fan of Percocet. When I'm in pain.
When is that bad? That's what you want to make sure.
I don't want to feel anything. I don't want to see anything. I don't want to hear anything. So that's something that you know, I've been blessed that I don't have to take anything and I'm not on any meds or anything, but that is something you definitely want to do your research on and see if they have compatible meds, because they're not the same. They're different over here. They use a lot of medicines that come from the UK and Europe and other countries. So you're not going to get like Advil. You're not going to get that here. You're not going to get NyQuil, which I love when you have a cold. And I bring these things back with me and I sometimes might share it with my colleagues or stuff. They're like, oh, that's good. Can you bring me some back when you go back? Because, you know, the strength and the actual content, I should say, is just much stronger.
Wow. That's good to know. Because a lot of times I think, you know, and especially in a lot of the groups I'm in, people are most surprised when they go to another country and they can't find the prescription that they had or the strength because the brand names are different or, you know, aren't looking at the ingredient level, right, to find a comparable one. And definitely recommend people to do their due diligence. Or you can also sign up for the Blaxa Global Move Abroad course.
Which, by the way, is a very good course.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you for doing it.
I just want to help the people get to salvation, get their freedom papers. So, Tiffany, as we close, what is next for you?
Well, for me, I think what I'm going to do is I am actually writing a book on my experience. So I'm looking to, hopefully, I can't say when that's going to be finished, but I'm looking to do that. I'm also looking to put together just like a high level, like an e-learning course to give that person, if you're interested in becoming an expat or a digital nomad, some things like, is this a good decision for me? Is this good for my personality and who I am and where I am in the journey? So I want to be like you, Krishan, when I grow up. You're amazing.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you. You're amazing. I'm like, you're like Saudi Arabia. I'm like, oh, I definitely need to have a conversation with you.
So, but no, I'm just grateful that we met and you shared so much of your life and your research with people and everybody. Definitely, if you haven't had an opportunity, you want to check out her class for moving abroad. It's really good. I wish I had it before I moved abroad, but it's all good now because now I look at the different things and stuff. So that's really, really important. I guess the next steps for me too would be continuing to collaborate with other people such as yourself and just educate our people, you know, other Black people, that this is possible. You're not stuck in a rut. You're not incapable. You're not, you know, no matter what people tell you, you're able to do whatever you want. And it all starts in the mind. And trust me, I know what it's like to have stinking thinking. I know what it's like to be afraid. but you can overcome it. And once you overcome it, you'll just be so happy that you did, and there's no turning back. So that's it.
Yes, I love that. That's the perfect way to end this conversation, because knowledge is power. And yes. I look forward to continuing conversations with you and collaborations. And I'm so excited for your journey and continued evolution. It's been an honor to have you as a guest on the Black to Global podcast. And I know a lot of people, when they listen to this episode, are going to be surprised as well as inspired by your journey. Thank you.
I appreciate you. I am so grateful to you and for your time. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Black Slate Global podcast. For more information on today's episode, be sure to visit our website at blackslateglobal.com. It's not only possible to live out your dreams unbothered and in full color, it is your birthright. Are you trying to sort out health plans, banking, VPN, and other connectivity for your move abroad? Well, have no fear, we've got you with the Move Abroad Starter Kit. Get yours today at blackslateglobal.com/resources. That's blackslateglobal.com/resources.